A very good morning to sports commentator Sam Ackerman in Tauranga. Morning.
Very good morning, Catherine. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Thanks tracking well at yours?
Yeah, going very well, thank you. Can't complain. Level three's brought the same levels of internal insanity, but a bit more ability to get out towards things like the beach, which is just down the road, for a really quick fresh air burst for the kids and mellows them out. So I think everyone's starting to appreciate it a little bit more. I can't say that I've been either brave or stupid enough to venture towards the takeaways side of things. I've been given that a wide berth. Let that one go straight through the keeper.
That's a good plan for now, leave it alone till the third over. All right,
let's get
to the straight to business. Now, the NRL, goodness, it is the biggest soap opera in sport. It was only a week ago we were talking about Raylene Castle's demise at Australian Rugby, and of course that had been building and building. But what is going on now with the NRL?
It's never a dull moment, and it's the sport, as we've talked about before, that is under the seemingly most urgency to get back. And we know that May 28th is the date, so it is this month. We're looking forward to seeing rugby league back in action. It comes with so many subplots. The one that matters most to New Zealanders, of course, involves the Warriors. They are due at this stage, as we speak, to be on a plane, a chartered plane, to fly about 50 of them over to, that's players and staff, over to Australia, where they could live for the next 5 months away from family, to run this 18 weeks left of the regular competition before they go into the finals and whatnot. It is a big deal to also do that level up routing, but the Warriors still aren't completely certain they're going, because they're waiting for a final decision on what the pay requirements will be, whether the Warriors as a club can manage those payments, whether the players are happy with what those decisions are. There's a lot of negotiations still going on. Plus, they're still waiting for written, confirmed approval from the state government in New South Wales that they'll be allowed in, and when they're there, they're allowed to train under quarantine. It's quite a few unanswered questions before departing for what would be virtually half a year away from friends, family, and the comforts of home. So it's intriguing. The Warriors still remain adamant they're going. The players do hold a lot of power right now. The other NRL clubs are saying that they will boycott the official start of training, which is Monday, until the Warriors are allowed to train at this stage as well. So a show of solidarity there. But the biggest thing for me, Catherine, is the NRL players. We know that trying to keep sports people all behaving at the same time is not the easiest, unfortunately, when you've got young men with cashed up and a lot of spare time on their hands. And there have been three or four examples across the Tasman of high-profile names. We're talking State of Origin players, premiership winners, misusing or ignoring the social distancing rules, and they're getting themselves under a lot of trouble. The biggest problem here isn't that these guys are turkeys and they're getting fined tens of thousands of dollars. Is that if one of them catches it and they go into training, then everybody's got it. This entire competition comes crumbling down again. So for the NRL to achieve what they say they can and will achieve, it relies on a bunch of young men who, as I say, cashed up, have a lot of time on their hands and have a lot of people in their ear, all abiding by the same rules. Rugby league's existed since 1908, and there's still yet to be a season where they all exist by the same rules, Catherine. So there is a lot at stake. And I don't know what it's going to take to get through these guys. Everyone is taking it pretty seriously about their bubbles as it is. But when your livelihood and the livelihood of all your peers rests on those same shoulders, pull your head in.
Yes. Do you think they're going to make it? Do you think it's all going to line up, or is it big talk almost trying to barnstorm towards a date? What do they call it? The big hairy audacious goal.
Yeah, my expectation is that rugby league will be played on the 28th of May. I honestly believe that they will achieve it. My biggest thought is whether they will maintain it. The plan sounds great, but does that require – what happens if the circumstances change around us? It shuts down again and then everything's stuffed once and for all. Part of me admires the way the NRL are forging ahead, because if they can set up this competition that can run in isolation within the rules, then you're actually providing a service to the wider public, and sports fans who may not be league fans may find themselves watching it, because your options are that or highlights from 20 years ago. And part of loving sport is not knowing what the result is as you go into it. So I think it's a great opportunity for them. I've been a passionate rugby league fan for a very long time. I also know they've got an incredible propensity for stuffing it up. and administrators can make bold calls and not deliver, or players can let the side down. And it's going to be so easy. All it takes is one player, one solitary player in a wider training squad or anywhere to contract this virus and hell in a handbasket for the competition. So I'm optimistic at the start. I am yet to be convinced that they'll be able to go through this whole period. So, for example, some of the players were struggling with their families as well, were struggling with the pressures that we all are under these kind of lockdown and quarantine procedures. So they went off to another player, Latrell Mitchell's property, and they went shooting and riding on dirt bikes and all that kind of stuff. You've got a big section and all that type of thing. But they were not. They posted social media photos of themselves not social distancing. And all it takes is one person to bring that in, and that's it.
Let's talk about rugby then, and obviously massive challenges there, both for New Zealand rugby but also world rugby. Let's talk first about how New Zealand rugby is keeping itself, its head above water, basically, financially and organisationally.
Yeah, so the annual report that's just come out suggested that if there's no rugby this year, that's a 70% drop in revenue. But they do have, that sounds, of course, it's critical. It's terrible for any organisation. But they did mention they do have $93 million kind of backed up to get them through this process. So don't cry for them. They're doing okay. This is not an organisation that's got, they've been saving up for a rainy day. No one wants to use it, but that could well be the case. There's also a talk of a multi-million, I think it's $15 million injection coming in from World Rugby. They're prepared to pay the all the nations what would be their four-year cycle of cost fees and injections that they offer up front. New Zealand Rugby is still deciding if they'll take it, but when and how they'll use it, they'll work out. But that's there. So there are options to help, quote unquote, bail them out on the money side of things. But where it's really starting to get interesting at the moment, Catherine, is involve the politics of who makes the decisions. Because for as long as rugby has been played internationally, there's been this north-south divide as far as a power struggle, whether alliances, whatever you want to call it. And there's a really interesting thing going on about who will be the chairman of World Rugby, formerly known as the IRB. And right now, Bill Beaumont, a man from England with considerable experience and knowledge and held in a high regard, he's that man. And all the Northern Hemisphere's teams want to keep him in there, mainly because it suits them perfectly. It means decisions being made with the old firm, the home unions, all in charge and being taken into consideration. You may remember last year, year before, they're talking about this global competition, the World Championship, where everybody kind of plays everybody. There's a little bit of promotion relegation. Well, that fell over purely because of the nations like Scotland and Italy. They didn't want to put themselves in that situation where they could get relegated. Right now, they're sitting pretty in a Six Nations competition where they get wads and wads of cash, even if they suck. It doesn't matter. They don't have to be good to make money. So they shut it down. New Zealand Rugby is frustrated. They've thrown their lot in with Augustine Pichot, the former Argentina halfback, a wonderful player in his day. And he's a man who looks like he wants to do revolutionary things, but they're relying on everybody else backing them up. They've come out and very, very vocally said that they want change. They're sick of this. So if they can't get Pichot through, then I can tell you it's going to make for a very, very intriguing battle, because if Beaumont's in, they've already declared that they don't want him, they don't like him.
How does it get determined? What's the sort of is it like the sort of electing a pope or what? How are these decisions made? Yeah.
No, nothing to do with smoke out of chimneys, but there is a fair bit involved in the politics of it. The voting closes today, I believe. It's Friday, so I think it's Friday New Zealand time. So all the nations will have to put their votes in. We'll find out, I think, on the 12th of May or so. So a few days to sort out when it's going to happen, how it happens. But the votes are in. New Zealand Rugby did make their last ditch call to try to make sure the Samoas of the world, because eligibility is a big deal. One of the Bill Beaumont has kind of thrown in the sweetener recently that he's prepared to look at the eligibility rules now, wasn't before, but now that there's an election on the cards, which would mean somebody plays a couple of tests for the All Blacks, they would then down the line be available to play for Samoa. Unlike now, if they lace up the boots and come on in the 95th minute of an extra time test, they still are an All Black for life and will never play for anybody else. So they want to soften those rules. So there's all kinds of politicking going on. New Zealand rugby's made their mark. Let's hope for them, for their sake and for all of our sakes, they came up on the right side.
Been some other bits and pieces around with rugby as well. Are we still fighting some old battles from what feels like an eternity ago?
Yeah, so we're obviously, when we've got all this time for navel gazing in all aspects of our lives, we do talk about some of the things that have happened in the past. And when there's no sport going on, it's very hard to interview sports people about it, but there's still that thirst and we're still intrigued by it from hearing from them. And Ian Smith, the wonderful commentator from Sky Sport, former New Zealand cricketer, of course, interviewed Steve Hansen, who was the All Black coach up until the end of the last World Cup. He essentially was talking about the Lions series, which of course ended in that draw that didn't sit well with anybody. There's a penalty in the last couple of minutes that was overturned that looked like would be the moment to seal the deal for the All Blacks. It's overturned, and the All Blacks still scratching their head. And Steve Hansen kind of said that, you know, all we want and what we still want is an apology, that they got it wrong. And I just, for all the success that Steve Hansen's had, and I understand that, you know, that was a disappointment, feeling like an apology is still due. You didn't blame the referee, Roman Poit, specifically, more that those unnamed people, obviously involved with the overall running of the game at World Rugby, should have come forward and offered them an apology. And he reckons they would have got over it if that was the case. But because they didn't, it was hard for them to tell the players, oh, well, look, guys, it was a bad call, but we've got to run with it. I don't see why. I don't see why hearing from, I know in my jobs, if something was done as CEO, apology wasn't about to make my life better, or I wouldn't go, okay, then fine, the CEO of another organisation's apologised. It seemed a little petty, and it's not a conversation I think we would have heard or had spotlighted had there still been sport going on. So there are downsides to having these, yeah, these in-depth conversations.
Yeah, and also, as you say, just the dearth of actual action on the field, although, goodness, there's plenty of it. And there are new fields, and you've mentioned previously the rise and rise of esports. Extreme e-racing series, this isn't so much online, is this using electric cars?
Yeah, so before esports, probably parallel in fairness, in motorsport, they're referring to it as E being electric, as in Formula E racing is like Formula One, but with electric cars. So good looking cars, no car noise, nothing that adds to the flavour for the petrol heads. Hi, Otis. Daddy's just talking on radio. Give us a second, buddy. Excited by the prospect of Formula E and what that is, but as far as where the interest lie, it hasn't really zoomed up the world now. But this Extreme E is off road, so they've kind of got about four or five locations in 2021, and it's all about bringing focus to climate change. For example, they are going there on literally the slow boat. That they are, there's no planes or anything like that. They're reducing carbon footprint. They're going to places to highlight, like Senegal, I think there's Saudi Arabia, Greenland, places you wouldn't normally expect for high profile racing. And they've also set a new rule about equality, that the teams of two drivers, a driver and co-driver, that swap out throughout the race, so one's co-driver, then swap around, one must be male, one must be female. It's believed to be the first time it's happened in professional racing. So it's a great thing to have that as a carrot. And why not? You're starting a competition from scratch. You make the rules. It's not about enforcing something change on people. It's setting things up. And until proven otherwise, how can it not be a good idea?
I'm trying to think of who's the motor racing star who's been involved in that Cromwell racetrack, and he's one of our most successful race stars, and he's getting into the electric vehicle side of things now. We'll talk about the next story, and I'll find it while we're doing that.
Mitch Sam. Evans, or
say again.
Mitch Evans is a driver. Do you mean Mitch Evans?
No.
Was for Formula E, and Brendan Hartley's had a run in Formula E recently as well. So yeah, we are seeing New Zealanders start to get themselves involved. But yeah, it's definitely the way things are tracking.
It's got to be, hasn't it? Okay, to surfing, and of course, people have been desperate to get back out there to enjoy their amateur surfing and just their hobby. However, the sport as a top competition sport growing and growing, yeah?
Yeah, it's really interesting because I mean, it's controversial to say it, and people who do love surfing get worked up like no end about it. But if we're being honest, most people refer to and who are interested in surfing view it as a pastime that they enjoy doing, and they'll like the odd clip online. But not many people gravitate towards the competitions and follow the world championship. Well, if you ask those running the World Surfing Leagues, they want that to change. They're setting up a new system, and they think that this reset where people are going to think, well, you know, some sports may not be as practical, as desirable. How do you get people involved? What they're going to do is work towards having a race that decides a surf-off, if you like, between the best two surfers in the comp. They decide like a grand final, because that's really what sport's all about, right? And there's nothing I personally can't, I would never say to you that I prefer watching a Premier League football or a Formula One season where the champion can be decided five races to go and the rest is just mundane. I like a decider, and I think a lot of general sports people do. And that's what they want to set up. It hasn't been that way, and you know, the races kind of can prove anticlimactic. So they want to set up a big deal finale, and they reckon that's going to help revolutionise things. They're about to go in the Olympics when the Olympics eventually come back. This year's Tokyo Olympics, before postponed, was going to be their debut there, and to really kind of up the ante. And of course, there's this great technology that's going with the artificial surf stadiums, essentially, where they're making perfect waves from, you know, machine generated to allow these guys to perform at their best. It's not a case of going, well, there's competition on, we're going to have to wait 4 days for the swells to pick up. It's, you know, imagine if you could control that kind of level of your competition, suddenly everyone's just showing off what they can do. Surfing looks well-placed. They just need to convince everybody else. They just need to convince the rest of us that we want to stop and watch it rather than just look at the big crashes and the highlights when they come out on our Facebook feeds.
It's part of that new move, and I know New Zealand academics were advising the Olympic Committee on it. Holly Thorpe was. It was this new sort of surge of sports that are making their way through that they are recommending come into the Olympics, and you can sort of see new generations. You can see their orientations changing when it comes to their sporting preferences in every way.
Absolutely.
That's just going to keep happening. Hayden Paddon was the motor racing guy, right. I was thinking about, yeah.
He's a wonderful Geraldine driver, and he's had a frustrating time with the rally cars. So I'd say that he's too talented to sit on the shelf for long. So if he can get himself into the e-racing section, I wouldn't thumb my nose to that at all. He's a very talented and a hard-working guy.
Thanks very much. Sam Ackerman is our sports commentator.